Hi, everybody. My name is Josh Nason, and this is Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. Welcome back. Continue our look back at the year that was 2021 in the world of pro wrestling with March. And believe it or not, another first-time guest. And this guy, you know him if you're a subscriber to this website. You probably heard his name before. Even if you're not a subscriber and you visited this website, Carl Stern, the man that did a diss rap about me earlier this year. I'm benevolent. I brought him back, and I don't say brought him back because he never went anywhere, but he's here, and we talk about that, and a pretty wild pro wrestling month of March, as all of them were eventful stuff. We were all well on the road to WrestleMania. We had a dud of a finale in the AEW exploding barbed wire death match at Revolution, and all kinds of stuff in between. This is a fun show, as they all have been, and I hope you guys enjoy it. Let's kick it over to this hour-long conversation with myself, Carl Stern, and you for March 2021 in the world of professional wrestling. Let's do it. Well, I did not think at the beginning of this year that if someone had done a diss rap track about me that I'd have him on the show, but things have changed, and he's here. So for the first time on the show, as we go through the year in wrestling that was a wild year, 2021, talking about the month of March, the longtime podcaster and writer for this here website, and also whenitwascool.com, talking about all types of cool retro stuff and things that everyone's really interested in these days, of course. The man himself, Carl Stern, is here. The Dragon King, Carl, welcome.
This is almost like what, you know, Tupac and Dr. Dre burying the hatchet or something like that. What's happening here? The East West is over. No more rapping.
I like it. Yeah, you thought I was on the West Coast. I'm like, oh, no, man. I'm an East Coast guy, man. East Coast.
Oh, well, there we were. See, I discovered we were mutual allies after all. So
That's right. Well, I'm glad to have you here. And it's been a long time coming. And actually, I had you on for a while. And this series was the perfect start for it. And someone actually on the board, I kind of looking through something one day, and they're like, oh, I'd love to see a Carl and Josh show sometime. And you're like, I'd be up for it. And I'm like, well, shit, let's make it happen. So it's happening right here today. I love it.
That's right. It's one of those things that for so long, I mean, there's so many people at F4W that I just haven't crossed over with for whatever reason. And mostly, I mean, here's the reality of the situation. Mostly, it's my fault because my work schedule is extraordinarily difficult, and I oftentimes have to let people down because I get changes in my schedule and whatever. And so it's difficult, and so I just lone wolf it, to keep from hurting somebody's feelings unintentionally or whatever. But I'm definitely, there's several people I'd love to do a crossover show with, and gosh, you're the first in quite a while. So there we go.
Let's
hit this year in review here.
I love it. So again, we're going to talk about the month of March 2021. As we do this, I go through all the bunch of headlines and stories that we did throughout the month. Not every single one is in here because it's impossible to do that. Like not every result of Raw or Dynamite or something like that. But kind of hit the major rocks and then some pebbles in between. As always, you know, there's a lot of stuff here that we forget about all these months later. So we'll start. We'll start with WWE as we usually do, and kind of the big news of the month. You know, it's the planning for WrestleMania and all that in the month ahead. But we had NXT. The Wednesday Night War was over. NXT finalizing their move to Tuesdays after WrestleMania. Multi-year extension was signed with USA, and just like that, Carl, the Wednesday Night Wars were over.
What a anticlimactic finish, and quite frankly, an anticlimactic whole series. It's not the Monday Night War I remember. Certainly, this war was. We learned a lot of things, and one of the things, and I get oftentimes criticized for this commentary because it kind of goes against the company line, but what it really showed me was the substantial decline in the popular culture relevancy of pro wrestling in general over the last 20-25 years. I mean, this was the numbers we were talking about and arguing over in minutia now in 2021 were so incredibly different. And when I was talking to various Laps fans, who, of course, we talk, all my stuff is classic wrestling oriented and whatever, when I talk to them, they don't understand the minutiae of the numbers the way that people who currently keep up with the product does. The first thing they're slapped in the face with is, oh my gosh, nobody's watching this now. And we know that there's more to the story. We know that there's more to the way people consume television and internet and thing. And, you know, the Nielsen ratings are problematic as well.
Yep.
But it's different. It's a different world now. But that's the thing that I think we, for lack of a better term, inside the wrestling bubble, just refuse to see or can't see is this gigantic decline. And I know I'm comparing this rather against one of the largest peak periods ever in the history of the wrestling business. And that's the Monday night, the original Monday Night War was an anomaly, and this is more normal. But man, and some of the things you're going to go through on this list, I'm just kind of reading down through here, sort of reading ahead, I think is part of the problematic reason why.
Yep. Well put. Well put. I would agree. I think, we'll get to some of these things, but yeah, I would tend to agree. I think, you know, when people, and you said minutia, I think that's a great way to put it. I mean, back in, again, those Monday Night Wars eras, which I'm sure a lot of people have heard ad nauseum, which they should. I mean, there's just so many more millions of people watching the product on Monday nights. It was just different. Granted, there was less stuff to do. We didn't have all these streaming services and the internet wasn't as big and as it is now. Social media didn't exist to that extent. It was just different. Now, you know, a shift of 50,000 fans. Everyone's like, oh, wow, it's a big thing. It's like back in the day, it just was not the case. But let's keep
Josh,
going. Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, not to hang us up here, I understand we're just at the beginning, but to set the course of things, we do have to understand that someone made this really interesting statement, I think on the board or somewhere, but that pop culture is now decentralized. And I think that is a really astute observation, because it really is. Back 20, 25 years ago, yes, everybody watched television. That's what you did. You came home and watched TV. It was the main centralization of popular culture, that and radio to a smaller degree. Now it's divided in so many different directions with the internet. You have YouTube videos, you have various streaming services, many streaming services. You still have TV, you still have radio, you have Spotify, you have all these different places that pop culture is located, not just in one place, and thus people are spread around. And my point is, we really lack a accurate measuring service to do that. Nielsen ratings, in my opinion, just don't cut it anymore.
Yep.
Unless you're also covering all that too, getting the numbers in from all that. So anyway, that's not to belabor the point.
No, I would completely agree. Completely agree. Going down this list, Bobby Lashley regaining the WWE title, or defeating Miz rather. I think it might have been his first WWE title. I cannot remember all the title changes, but Miz, the transitional champion, Bobby Lashley winning that title on Monday Night Raw. Drew McIntyre was announced later in the month challenging Lashley for the title at Mania, and he was going to, this is the second straight year, he was going to be challenging for the title, and hopefully, and again, this year with actually fans in front of him, which we'll get to in a minute, because WWE was announced, or actually wasn't announced, it was a story that David reported first, or someone had, that WWE wanted 45,000 fans in the building for Mania. It ended up being a 25,000 per night. And we learned a few things about this show throughout the month of March, obviously. Hulk Hogan and Titus O'Neil co-hosting, an interesting duo there. The event, no big surprise, sold out quickly, despite this being really in the kind of the heart of the pandemic, depending on, you know, where you're at with that. But yeah, we're still in it, but it was definitely, you know, touch and go there. But sold out very quickly. Two-night takeover for the very first time was announced for WrestleMania weekend with Stand and Deliver. Almost was announced as debuting at WrestleMania. We learned a little about Stand and Deliver with Karrion Kross taking on Finn Balor for the NXT title that Cross never lost. He had to relinquish due to a shoulder injury. Io Shirai versus Raquel Gonzalez, main event in one of the nights. Volter, the NXT UK champion, making a surprise appearance on NXT TV, and a title match against Ciampa with Tommaso Ciampa announced for the show. And then also Adam Cole versus Kyle O'Reilly, an unsanctioned match. Daniel Bryan versus Edge versus Universal Champion Roman Reigns was announced for WrestleMania. Asuka, taking on Rhea Ripley defending her title against Rhea Ripley at Mania. Bad Bunny, man, that was on the lips of so many throughout the year. The early part, taking on The Miz in his pro wrestling debut. Everyone's favorite, The Fiend against Randy Orton. Everyone's favorite feud of the year, I guess you could say. And then Braun Strowman versus Shane McMahon, rather, in another match that was announced. Logan Paul appeared on SmackDown. He was set to be part of WrestleMania. And we heard that two classes were going to be announced to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. Molly Holly, Eric Bischoff, Kane, Great Khali, RVD, and William Shatner in the 2021 class, plus all the people from 2020. And it was announced there's going to be no Dave Bautista after all because he had other commitments that were being taken away from the event. Any thoughts on any of that before we get to the rest of the list?
Well, I mean, obviously there's a lot to unpack in there, but just some overarching thoughts on it. For one thing, clearly we're still in the era of the pandemic. And so these attendance numbers, live attendance numbers, really you have to historically take those with a grain of salt. And that's one of the things that I want to make sure when I'm chronicling this era of wrestling, the various stuff I do is that the main point. I mean, that is the main thing, or you do get a wrong impression of what's going on now. We still have, even if you don't have straight up pandemic restrictions at various places, there are still lots of people who, are afraid to be in large crowds or there's still restrictions somewhat on various ways to travel, especially when you're doing it country to country. There's a lot that goes into it. So the attendance figures for this era are heavily skewed through no fault of anybody's. One of the things that sticks out on this list here is the Batista thing. And, you know, Batista is one of those last kind of stars of that era good for him. He went on to be a huge star. Now, maybe he's not a movie star to the degree of The Rock or whatever, but he's still huge. He's been in some of the biggest movies that's been made in the last, 10 years, and good for him. And I think, he's always had kind of a hot and cold relationship with WWE and wrestling in general to begin with. But to me, he's, for what the WWE Hall of Fame is, he's clearly at the top of that class there. His credentials for the Observer Hall of Fame may be considered differently, but for what WWE is, he's a big star and was a big star for them. And it's, doesn't have the time, and I can understand. He's a busy guy.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, like you said, not a global star to the extent of The Rock, but he's certainly well known. Those Guardians of the Galaxy movies certainly brought him to a different level. He was in a Bond movie. He was in Dune. I mean, he's getting work. So yeah, he's a much different level, but certainly a level that a lot of actors in Hollywood would love to be at. Let's go over this this first section here, and we'll get some thoughts. I know you have some thoughts on one of these in particular. So I'll read through this, and then I'll kick it over to you. NXT announced they're going to be creating women's tag team titles because we need more titles in pro wrestling. WWE banned slapping the leg and thigh during matches. This was kind of a big thing that was talked about a lot. We'll get to that in a second. Kevin Egan, the newly anointed Kevin Patrick, signed with WWE to be an announcer. WWE announced it was going to be launching the network on Peacock starting March 18th. And the standalone service for the U.S. Customers is going to be done in April 4th. John Laurinaitis, Johnny Ace, brought back to lead talent relations. Everything old is new again. NXT UK's Ben Carter got a new name. Asuka, again, she was recovering from a concussion, didn't know when she was going to be back, and then she appeared on Raw. I think it was about a week later or so. Andrade, this is pretty crazy. He was denied his WWE release. He posted publicly that he had asked for it. And he later got it, and it was revealed that with that release, there was no non-compete clause. He could start anywhere he wanted to the next day, and he got to work pretty quickly. NXT ref Tom Caster tore his biceps. Matty Wahlberg, no, not that Wahlberg family, and Steph DeLander, two Australian prospects signed with NXT. COVID outbreak affected a weekly NXT show. This is, again, when they were running, obviously, live. And the this is going to be a recurring story, throughout the early part of this year, with just NXT just getting hit with these COVID outbreaks, kind of causing all types of havoc there. Charlotte Flair was attached to a reboot of Walking Tall for some reason. And it was also revealed she had COVID-19 during the month as well. Bad Bunny, instead of losing the 24/7 title, decided to just simply hand it over to R-Truth on Raw. I believe it's R-Truth's 50th reign for the title, for those keeping track. And then finally, Fastlane results of the month. The aforementioned Fiend returned after a long absence. Roman Reigns defeated Daniel Bryan for the retained the Universal Championship in a half an hour match. Alexa Bliss, as part of that Fiend angle, defeated Randy Orton, what I believe might be the first ever WWE intergender match, if that's what you want to call it. Carl, I kick it over to you for some thoughts.
Well, again, a lot to what does it, nothing really screams out right there is you know, all time history altering or anything. I think there's actually some components there that sort of are in that. We're beginning to see the ingredients being just like baking a cake. We're starting, the cake's not coming out of the oven yet, all huge and beautiful and wonderful, but we're seeing some ingredients put in there that are going to affect the change of atmosphere, so to speak. So one of the things that keeps wrestling, like, you think about this for a moment, Josh. I mean, how long does a hit, a real true hit TV show on television usually last? It's usually somewhere, what would you say, around 6 to 8 seasons.
Yeah,
really good. Something you think about, yeah, like Sons of Anarchy and you know, Lost and
Walking Dead, things like that.
Yeah, exactly. Game of Thrones, things like that. So they after a time, the story's told. And one of these things you think about with these shows is usually they run about 2 to 3 seasons too long. Usually the story's been told, but the show's very successful, bringing in money, so they just keep it going. And usually you have very disappointing endings. Well, you think about professional wrestling, it's been around, you know, in some form here in the United States since the Civil War. How does it keep going? Why does it keep happening? Well, the reason it does is because it changes, it evolves. You know, originally it was, you know, it was sort of hybrid shoot, hybrid work. It got, when popularity started to wane, a new star would come along that got tied up in the age of vaudeville and took a turn there into more, you know, entertainment type things. And you could follow it on and on and on through history. We're at one of those crossroads now. The story of wrestling played out. It played out at the end of the last Monday Night War, around the year 2000, when WCW ended. That was really that's really when Lost should have went off the air, so to speak, or, you know, Walking Dead or whatever. That's when pro wrestling, that was the story. It was done, but it just keeps going. So it has to evolve and it has to change. And WWE, with them as the real monopoly, so to speak. I know there are others, of course, TNA and whatever came along, but they were the main show. They weren't evolving, and popularity started declining. Well, we're in that period now where, by force, it's changing. And WWE is going in a very entertainment-oriented direction. I mean, WWE is more akin to Saturday Night Live than it is a sport.
Yeah,
AEW has come along and taken a more sporting aspect of it, a more modern, a more, quite frankly, it's somewhat related to video games. And I don't say that as a knock, but I'm saying that is because the audience is presenting to, the movesets that are used and the personalities and the pop culture jargon are geared toward that set. So we're going in two different directions. And of course, the longtime fans are kicking and screaming the whole way, but it's necessary for it to evolve. When I look at things in WWE here that you mentioned, like, you know, bans on slapping the leg and the thigh during the match. I mean, this is just an example of paying attention to the wrong things. They get so worked up in banning words like wrestling and wrestler and belt and whatever that they're tied up in so many things that don't matter, missing the larger picture. You're so wrapped up in that that you're missing the fact that your camera work makes the makes your show unwatchable.
Yeah.
And that's a big problem. You've got these people in a product that's now having by force to change, whether it's going the right direction or the wrong direction. Only history will tell that. But the people that are doing this, that are in the driver's seat of this change, are 70 to 80 year old men. And it's time for a real shakeup. And I think we're starting to see some of that too, with all these various inexplicable releases for no reason with a gigantic, you know, highly profitable company. One of the things that's on this section you just mentioned here was WWE Network moving to Peacock. And, you know, I think that was a very significant thing that happened. I liked WWE Network. I liked the way it was structured. I liked the way it was set up. And when it moved to Peacock, I thought, oh, this is not good. This, and there were some negatives, but now, quite frankly, the way it's integrated in, it's fine. It's part of a larger entertainment package. I have Peacock. I watch other shows on Peacock as well. And I think it ended up being fine. It's not perfect, but it's okay. But anyway, Josh, that's basically my thoughts there.
Good. All right. Well, let's close out this other section. We'll wrap up WWE. Not a lot huge here, but Walter, like I mentioned, he returned NXT, making his return to TV, and then Sari getting a new name for NXT as well. Charlie Caruso, longtime backstage interviewer, was done with WWE. There were some stories about her being late for interviews and all types of stuff, and she ended up being done and moving to ESPN full time. Kurt Stallion fractured his wrist, and then Casey Catanzaro had a partially torn LCL that would keep her out of action. I believe that was the last we'd see of Kurt Stallion before he was released. Thunderdome ended its latest residency in Tampa at Tropicana Field because the baseball season was about ready to start. So after Mania, they were moving to the Yuengling Center in Tampa Bay instead. Kane, Glenn Jacobs himself, running for re-election as Knox County Mayor in Tennessee. Danny Burch hurt his shoulder on NXT TV in a tag team title match and resulted later in the titles becoming vacant. And then MSK, Grizzled Veterans, and Ligo del Fantasma were going to be facing off at TakeOver to decide the new tag team champions. Just talked about Peacock a second ago. They were kind of came out that they were reviewing and editing WWE content for the library, you know, removing, you know, some of the blackface imagery and things like, I believe it was WrestleMania 6, the Roddy Piper bad infamous promo backstage for his match with Bad News Brown. That caused a lot of consternation with the fan base, of course. Road Dogg suffered what was it called? Likely a heart attack. I don't know if it was ever really confirmed it was. He ended up being released in the hospital about a week after or less. And he seems to be doing good, so that's good for him. WWE and DraftKings announced a deal right before Mania. Taya Valkyrie was announced she was going to debut on NXT. We all know what happened to her. Wesley suffered a broken hand at February's TakeOver, we learned. And then Teoman, a.k.a. Lucky Kid, debuted in NXT UK. And I know it wasn't really much newsworthy there, but anything there that catches your interest?
Just briefly, the Peacock editing deal. I mean, that's not something either Peacock or WWE should really get criticism for. That's just the reality of new media. I mean, every company that you know, Disney with the properties they buy, that's just the reality of new media. And that's I of course at my website cover comic books and stuff too, and whenever you bring back old collections, especially from like the golden age, you're talking about the 40s and 50s and stuff, obviously there's going to be a lot of problematic stuff with that, and mm-hmm. they have to deal with the same questions. You know, what do you preserve historically for better or worse versus you know, bringing it up to a more correct and a better version of what, and with WWE being just a entertainment property, I think it's, you know, I think it's, you're less concerned. I mean, I know this is weird coming from a historian, but it's, I think you're less concerned with preserving history, warts and all, than you are with putting out a product that more people can consume comfortably without, you know, not erasing the mistakes of the past, so to speak, because those are well documented, but making it, you know, something everybody can enjoy. And I think that's appropriate. Mm-hmm.
Let's move to AEW. And I almost let off with this because this was such a this is quite something. Cluster F might be one way to put it. It was the AEW Revolution pay-per-view. Really, Ozzy, great pay-per-view, as most AEWs are. Of course, we are co-opted and paid by AEW. Carl, I think you know that, so we have to always say good things about AEW. But the finish to the exploding barbed wire death match, the spectacle that was between Jon Moxley and Kenny Omega, Moxley trying to regain the AEW title, getting revenge for what happened at Winter's Coming in December. When he lost the belt in a very rare world title rematch in AEW, they don't really have these that often when the title changes hands. And of course, everyone listening to this obviously knows what happened at the end. Eddie King, the layout was a nod to an Onita match back in the day, and it was Eddie Kingston coming out to protect his friend Jon Moxley from this massive explosion. And it was just, four sparklers in the corners and a couple puffs of smoke and us just sitting at home being like, what happened? Is something else going to happen? And that's how the pay-per-view ended. It was, and Eddie Kingston laying there for what felt like 10 minutes. I think I timed out was about like 90 seconds, give or take, but it just felt, it felt like forever. Tony Khan trying to explain in kayfabe what happened afterwards and saying that, the Good Brothers built a bad bomb, and I wrote a column about that. I wrote a column about that. I think sometimes he had to be more like a Dana White type in that and be like, here's what happened. It was not a free TV thing. It was a pay-per-view thing, and it just didn't go right. And I think it's okay to say this did not go as planned. And we're going to make this right, or we're going to figure out what happened. And he eventually months down the road in an interview, actually, with Dan Lebatard, actually kind of went after the crew that did this and all stuff, but he really needed to kind of do it that night or at least say something. But regardless, that was just a mess. Also on the show, Pac and Rey Fénix winning the Casino Tag Team Battle Royale to earn a tag team title shot against the Young Bucks, which would happen the following week. Maki Ito debuted, Ethan Page debuted, Christian Cage debuted. This was leading in this Paul White, who was obviously a new signee in February, had announced he was going to welcome a Hall of Fame worthy candidate. Of course, a lot of people thought this might be Kurt Angle to debut, but it ended up being Christian Cage instead. I know some people didn't really like that, but what have you. All champions retained at the show, and then Sting returning to action, even if it's cinematic action, for the first time in a very, very, very long time, really since the Seth Rollins Night of Champions match where he injured his spine and the stenosis, and we thought that was going to be it. And we soon learned that was not going to be the last ride for Sting. He and Darby Allin picking up a victory over Brian Cage and Ricky Starks in this really fun cinematic street fight. The event generating $6 million in pay-per-view revenue was a huge hit there. But coming out of it, I mean, the talking point was the dud at the end. Sounds like they're going to do one of these death matches again. They're going to have to work to get people's trust back and everything, and I'm sure they'll pull it off. But this was quite a night for a lot of reasons.
I know you're a sports guy too. I mean, there's no better description of this than your favorite football team is they're 2 points down and it's right in the final seconds and they're lined up for this field goal. This kicker has hit this field goal every time. It's well within his range, and he just wafts it off to the side. Yep. Losing
wide right. Wide right.
Exactly. Very wide right. And, I mean, what can you say? It's just one of those head-shaking moments. I mean, I'm sure everybody involved wishes they could have a do-over in that one, but such as it is, I'm a fan of the cinematic matches. I mean, you might not peg me as somebody that likes that, but I love them. I think look, if you're going in the direction of entertainment, as obviously it's 2021. Nobody with any degree of intelligence thinks this stuff's real anymore. I like the cinematic stuff. I think it gives older legendary stars, people like Sting, like The Undertaker, whatever, an opportunity to still be relevant. And quite frankly, more of the stuff than not, really the John Cena Fiend thing's the only one I can think of that comes to mind of ones I just didn't like. I've liked all these so far.
Yeah, I thought it was shot really well. I think this was AEW's first run at having one of these, you know, cinematic style matches. And I think it, you know, from someone I've been watching since I was a kid, you know, I think it was like, I think it's like 87, maybe when I first started watching. And, you know, cinematic stuff. I remember when the first saw the Undertaker Styles match, and I'm like, what is this? Like, and it took me a while to like, cause my usual wrestling brain's kind of like, this is how it's supposed to be. And then it was this other presentation of it. And to me, it was just completely different. And yeah, I you know, I'm always kind of like, I don't say skeptical, but like cautiously optimistic, I guess you could say. And this was a lot of fun, just how they did it. And it was good. And yeah, like it was the gateway to Sting doing some more in-ring stuff. He seems to be having fun. He's not overused in terms of in-ring. And, you know, they're not like, oh, he's going to go for the AEW title or something like that, which who knows? I mean, they always could do that in kind of a fun angle if they ever chose to. But yeah, I think they came through here, and yeah, there was the, what did you think about the Christian sign? Were you kind of like, yeah, that's kind of what I expected, or what did you take away?
Yeah. I mean, obviously more hopeful that it was going to be, I hate to dog down on Christian because he's, you know, everybody likes him. He's a really solid wrestler. Obviously a certain demographic, a certain time period of fans remember him very fondly. I always found Christian just highly boring. I mean, I'm sorry, he just doesn't excite me at all. I know he's got a great reputation of being a great guy, and I wish him all the best in the world. He's just not necessarily my thing. And so yeah, it was kind of a for Cole here. So, you know,
I hear you. Well, let's go over the rest of this, this full list of AEW stuff. And then we'll get your thoughts and see if anything else tickles your fancy here. So Cody Rhodes, during a media call prior Revolution, one of the interesting quotes said, Pat McAfee calls him all the time about AEW. Cause this was some back and forth about the Shaquille O'Neal, Jade Cargill, Cody Rhodes, and Red Velvet matches, because Shaquille, I didn't even put this in the list, but they had that tag team match on Dynamite during the month, and Shaquille O'Neal looked pretty good. It was mobile and fun, and you know, he took a table shot. The weird ambulance disappearing thing was, you know, it is what it is there, and who knows how that'll pay off at some point. But there was some debate, you know, who had the better debut, McAfee or Shaquille, and then they're going back and forth, and Cody said, you know, Pat McAfee calls him all the time about coming to AEW, and yeah, I was contacting AEW every other day looking for a job, so that got some news out there.
Now, if it would have been John McAfee, that's a news story.
Yeah. Hey, did you ever watch that documentary, by the way, on McAfee?
No, I haven't, but that's what a weird story. Crazy story.
It is wild. I think it's on Netflix. You got to check that out. Yeah. At some point he's obviously passed away last year, like this year or last year. Might've been this year.
Yeah. I think last year. Yeah.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. And it's it was a fitting end to a absolutely crazy story. People that, you know, they have these programs that run on their computers all the time, like McAfee antivirus, like I have on mine right now. Mm-hmm. Is a guy that helped like start all this stuff, and where his story went was absolutely crazy. Yeah, absolutely.
Insane, yes.
Absolutely crazy. Paul White, again, we mentioned he made some news of the Hall of Fame worthy signing coming to Revolution. Ryo Mizunami winning the world title eliminator shot tournament. And this is the, you know, USA and Japan bracket. She won the tournament, got the opportunity at Revolution against Hikaru Shida and lost. New signees or official signees, Captain Sean Dean, Red Velvet, and Layla Hirsch all becoming hashtag All Elite. Big Swole revealed that, like a lot of people, she is dealing with Crohn's disease, and actually resulted one of the reasons that resulted in her actually parting ways with the company actually just this past week. I think for some other reasons too. Jungle Boy versus Danny Limelight was going to be announced to be the first ever match taped for AEW Dark Elevation, with Rio versus Maki Ito as the main event of that show. Thunder Rosa versus Britt Baker was announced they're having a lights out match for a St. Patrick's Day Slam edition of Dynamite. They had the match. It was unbelievable. It was a spectacle, to say the least. Completely delivered. It was over delivered, I think, in a lot of ways. Rosa picking up the victory, but Baker, I think, you know, coming out almost like the bigger star out of it. And it began her ascent towards a AEW Women's World title shot and eventually title reign. Anthony Bowen suffered a knee injury. John Silver suffered a shoulder injury. Say that five times fast. Out sick 4 to 6 months. Serena Deeb still injured with her knee, but was hopeful after a knee scope. Rose to the Top, a reality show starring Cody and Brandi Rhodes, was announced for later in the year. AEW announced they're running a house show during WrestleMania weekend. And then Chris Statlander and Trent returning from a long absences due to injury. Carl, thoughts on any of that?
The only thing I would mention is I really like Jungle Boy. And one of the things I really like about Jungle Boy is he's a throwback in this respect, that he integrates music, real actual pop culture music, with his act in a way that makes it that much more. And we've seen this happen now several times with AEW. They buy these songs and put them with somebody, and it works so good. When you go back and you look on Peacock or WWE Network, whatever, to ECW, nowadays in 2021, you watch through that and you're like, what is this low rent nonsense here? You totally miss the fact of time and place with the pop culture music of the time. It made a huge presentation difference. You go back and watch Junkyard Dog from back in the day. Without his entrance music, it's a completely different thing. I like this. I like this a lot. Again, you can't preserve this historically. It's one of those things, but AEW should be worried about here and now anyway, and so I like that. I like what they're doing, and that was just really one of the first times that kind of clicked, and now they've done it since then again, so good for them.
Let's move to Impact. We'll go over this list. Not a ton of news, but a couple of interesting things here. Impact, this is a move that I think kind of made sense. We talked about NXT moving to Tuesdays. And then there's this nice open slot on Thursdays, and Impact announced it in April. They were going to be moving from Tuesdays to Thursdays, and made a lot of sense for them. That basically made every single weeknight full of wrestling and double the wrestling in some cases, as it would be on Friday nights. TNA, Impact Sacrifice. This was essentially the next chapter in the eventual belt collector saga of Kenny Omega, as Rich Swann unified both the Impact and TNA titles in a victory over Moose. Finjuice won the tag team titles in their special event debut, so to speak, against the Good Brothers. And then Ace Austin won the X Division title over TJP. Kenny Omega versus Rich Swann, the title versus title match, was set for April's Rebellion pay-per-view, and Omega himself made his in-ring debut alongside the Good Brothers on Access TV. James Storm had his 1,000th match in Impact Wrestling / TNA, which is unbelievable to hear. Chris Harris actually appeared in the show, his former tag team partner there. I'm trying to remember. It's not America. Was it America's Most Wanted? That's what it was. That's what it was, yeah.
Great team that history's really forgotten.
Yeah, that whole era with TNA, I think so many people remember the Dixie and Russo stuff, and they're like, that was awful, and a lot of it was. But there's so much of their history that just gets shit on unnecessarily because people kind of focus on this one chunk and not thinking, like, there was just so many good things. I mean,
there were some great things. You think about, like, Elix Skipper and America's Most Wanted, and the stuff that Christopher Daniels was doing. So much good stuff that was, you've got to be skilled to do a show so bad that stuff that good gets forgotten. I mean, that takes a level of Russoification that is just amazing. I don't know.
Yeah, I would say for people to go check some of the stuff out. I mean, Samoa Joe versus Kurt Angle. I mean, those matches were, you couldn't have said it any better myself. That was, takes a lot to mess up all that. Hardcore Justice was announced for April. Eric Young tore his ACL about for a while. And then we learned that the Hard to Kill pay-per-view buys were the second best in the post-Spike era. That, of course, was Kenny Omega's in-ring debut in a six-man tag to help, set up the multi-month belt collector angle there. Thoughts on any of that, Mr. Stern?
I really didn't get to watch much Impact since all the television switching around, and it become, I didn't have the channel to watch it on or whatever, so I really only got to follow it by way of the Observer and the various radio show commentaries and stuff. So unfortunately, some of this sounds like Impact has turned the corner to being something watchable anyway, and sometimes somewhat interesting, but man, it has fallen off the radar. Even worse, I think, than back when it was so terrible. At least when it was so terrible, it was newsworthy in that it was so terrible. Now the predecessors to the owners of it now have sank the ship so deep that I think it deserves more attention than it gets, quite frankly. Now it's kind of a shame to see that where it's landed, in that they managed to right the ship a little bit. So I think that's interesting, especially when you look back historically at this. I think Impact's actually going to stand up looking a little better than it seems like it does right now.
Yeah, it's just it gets lost in, and I think I noticed this a lot this year, and this is just doing a lot of the news for the website along with the other guys, is it just, there's so much good stuff out there right now that it's hard to watch it all. And if you don't watch it all, it's going to get lost. There's only so many hours, and I don't know too many people that just watch wrestling. You know, you have to have a balance with, you know, your pop culture guys. We talked about when it was cool.com. You do all, you know, a lot of the retro stuff and current stuff, what have you. There's so many things that I want to watch and we want to watch that are outside of wrestling that makes watching wrestling more palatable. You know, you need a balance. Yeah. And it's just hard because, you know, I've Impact does good stuff. MLW does good stuff. There's great stuff in Japan. I mean, in ROH, but you know, there's only, and I think we're going to really kind of see this, the chickens come home to roost in this year ahead, and these other companies like the NWA, like how are they going to survive with, you know, there's making money and then there's not making money. And at some point you're going to be like, is this making a real impact or not? I have no doubt that Impact is going to stick around because, again, they're owned by Access and they love having this, that they bought. I mean, they wanted Impact. They wanted programming and what have you. It's just really just a question of how much is too much. And I think some groups are going to find out, which we just saw with Ring of Honor taking an absence that could be permanent. Who knows?
Right. I'm one of those cord cutters who parted ways. Last thing I had was DirecTV, and we've gone totally streaming.
Yep.
And so I'd lost, touch with Access, but now I have it back by way of the Philo service, which is where you watch Yellowstone, which is a hugely popular show right now. And so I noticed that was one of the shows there, and they are advertising Impact pretty regularly on there. Obviously it's part of the company that owns them, so I guess, you know, maybe that's how I rediscovered it. I mean, that's how I was like, oh, I can see Impact again. So maybe other people as well, because that's one of the few, if you're a cord cutter, it's one of the few options you have to watch. And you know, Yellowstone is probably the most popular show on television right now. And if I rediscovered it, others can as well.
So. Yep. Deservedly so. Yeah. We'll go through Japan again. I'm not a big Japanese wrestling watcher. I don't know about yourself, but we'll go through these headlines for the record books. 49th anniversary show, Kota Ibushi retaining the IWGP title over Desperado. We also had the kickoff to the New Japan Cup tournament. Okada, we learned he was working through some slip discs in his back. This is pretty scary. An earthquake. This is just New Japan's 2 years from hell, you know, in a lot of ways. They had an earthquake that paused an event they were having in Sendai. They took a break and then they actually came back. I guess I don't know how they were able to structurally make sure the building was okay. But it was, it was not a major earthquake, but it was enough to kind of pause some things there. So crazy stuff for New Japan, that country in general. Will Ospreay defeating Takagi in the New Japan Cup finals to earn a title shot against the aforementioned Ibushi at Sakura Genesis. The brand new IWGP world title belt was revealed and evoked memories of the WWE Divas Championship. It's a belt that no one seems to like, including Okada himself. Yo returned after a torn ACL. He was out for nearly a year. The New Japan Cup USA tournament bracket was announced. Mari Skrull, we talked about this last month or the last show in February with Brian Rose about his appearance in New Japan Strong that never saw the light of day, and the news that got out about that. He was scrapped out of New Japan's plans altogether, as well as New Japan Strong. And then New Japan announced a two-night Wrestle Grand Slam for a stadium for May. Thoughts on any of that? I don't know if you watch Japan or at all or not.
Well, I used to be a huge New Japan fan. I guess I am, but over the last year and a half or so, with the pandemic and as they really kind of changed up, I kind of lost the thread on New Japan a little bit. But I will say this: one of the things that is topical right now, of course, is the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame. Mm. And I'm one of those guys, and probably one of the more vocal ones, that says I'm tired of these young folks getting in the Hall of Fame. You can't get historical significance on people who are in their 30s still doing what they do in wrestling. But I'm wrong in one specific incident is for certain, and that's Okada. I mean, I voted for Okada in the Hall of Fame. There's no question he is, if there is ever been a, first ballot Hall of Famer, I think Okada is it. So anyway, that's my piece on Okada. I am a hypocrite. I don't care. Board, yell at me all you want to. I don't care. It's, I think he absolutely deserves to be there.
Very true. We flip to the aforementioned Ring of Honor. Again, this feels like kind of lame duck talking about them, but again, for the record books, it's important to kind of see where they were and where they ended up. La Fashion Ingobernables, Dragon Lee and Kenny King won the tag team titles on a TV show. Joey Mercury filed lawsuit against Ring of Honor and Sinclair following Kelly Klein doing the same the month before. I haven't really heard much about either of those, so maybe we'll hear about that more as we go through the rest of the year. Rush versus Jay Lethal world title match was set for the 19th anniversary pay-per-view return. We learned that Dragon Lee was going to be off the show due to a broken eardrum. Dalton Castle looked around in free agency and ended up re-signing with Ring of Honor. A women's world title tournament was announced for the summer. And at the 19th anniversary pay-per-view, two titles changing hands as Tracy Williams won the TV title and the tag team titles along with Brett Titus, defeating Bestia Del Ring and Kenny King, who had just won the titles, and Del Ring filling in for Dragon Lee because of broken eardrum. And a new faction, Violence Unlimited, debuted. This was, Brody Lee. Oh, my God. What is the guy's, what is the big guy with the tattoos?
Brody King.
Chris Dickinson, Homicide, and Tony Deppen, if I remember right, was part of that faction as well. Do you watch any Ring of Honor, any of that Ring of Bell?
Well, I mean, it's sad to see what's going on there now. It's one of those things, kind of like Impact. You just sort of always expect it was going to be around in some form, and maybe it will. Maybe it still will be, but we know it's at least going to be staged down some, and it's just too bad. I mean, they got a pretty rich history for what they were. They never really hit that, WWE, WCW, even AEW level of national exposure, but they were really, really good, especially early on. So many of the bigger names of the last, 15, 20 years have come through there and really made their name there. And it's like you mentioned earlier, I think a lot of this shakeout of the marketplace is coming up, and ROH is that's kind of, I think, where they're at in reality now.
We'll go through some of the junk drawer, so to speak. NWA returning to pay-per-view. This is going to be their first return since the pandemic. We're back for the attack. They were taping new episodes of Power at that pay-per-view. All champions retained, including Nick Aldis, Trevor Murdoch, and the Pope. But later on in the month, Chris Adonis defeated Trevor Murdoch to win the national title on one of their Power episodes. A charitable wrestling show was canceled due to Joey Ryan's involvement. That was a story that happened during March. Jim Crockett Jr., we mentioned this during February, that he was ill and things weren't looking good. He passed away in March, age of 76. Obviously a legendary promoter. You can speak more to that in a minute. Barry Orton passing away, obviously, during the month as well. GCW reviving the Jersey Championship Wrestling name for one night. For those that are into the Northeast Indies, used to trade tapes back in the day or buy them from RF Video. You remember Jersey Championship Wrestling. Kylie Rae, her short retirement ended. She announced she was returning to wrestling for Warrior Wrestling, which I believe is out of Illinois. And then Zelina Vega, at this point a free agent, signed a undisclosed deal, which would keep her out of going anywhere in pro wrestling for a couple months. I still have no idea what this was at all, but there was some thought she was going to be, signing with AEW, but that was put on the shelf, and obviously she didn't end up signing with AEW as well as at all. So, Carl, thoughts on that? I mean, obviously you know, as I mentioned, Jim Crockett Jr., you can speak that more eloquently than I do. His impact, and we talked a lot about it a lot on Wrestling Observer Radio and so on. But your thoughts?
Yeah, to speak briefly about the current incarnation of the NWA. Yeah, I think there's a place for it. I'm just not sure what that place is. I've watched a lot of their stuff. I like the presentation of it. It's definitely got an old school sort of feel. I just don't know how you monetize that. to the degree it needs to be. And there's something missing with it, and I just can't put my finger on it there. Plus, it's one of those things, kind of like the TNA name. It is tainted somewhat, and not in that it's, you know, been seen as irrelevant for so long. So I don't know. You know, I cheer for NWA to be successful, but I just don't know what that path is. As far as directly related to it, Jim Crockett Jr. Of course, he was one of the major components of my childhood growing up and my love of wrestling. I was already a fan before I got to start seeing, Mid-Atlantic and World Championship Wrestling. I was a fan of the Southern Territories, and we here didn't get that on television until I would probably been a fan maybe 4 to 5 years when I first got to see it. And of course, I knew who all the people were through the newsstand magazines and stuff. And when I got to watching it, it was just, I mean, I was just blown away by it. And Jim Crockett Jr. is, you know, there's the unfortunate way which that ended. I mean, he just didn't keep his eye on books. He let financial woes sneak up on him. And that's not unique to him. I mean, that's unique. That's not unique to him at all. Many companies have found themselves in that predicament. Many individuals have found themselves in that predicament. And unfortunately, that has caused his legacy to be, I think, somewhat tarnished. But that stuff, what he produced, what he was behind, has held up so incredibly even to this day. I mean, you're talking about 30, 35, even 40 years ago, people are still regularly talking. There are dozens of podcasts out there you can listen to talking about and talking to the people who became famous with him 30 and 40 years later. That speaks very strongly to what you did was important. What you did was historically relevant. What you did was good. And so I think, you know, just the fact that, yes, some terribly bad business decisions were made. The ship was sunk very quickly. But unfortunately, I think has overshadowed his legacy more than it should. The thing he was behind in putting out held up still even to this day. We're talking about it. People regularly watch. If I watch anything, in fact, I just watched an episode of World Championship Wrestling from 1986, just night before last. I mean, when I go to just putting something on in the background, that's the stuff I go to. And it's 2021. I mean, and I'm not alone in that. There's, like I said, you can go into Apple Podcast, iTunes, whatever. Just look at how many podcasts are talking about that time period and that person. That's something. Yeah. And just real quickly, Barry Orton, he's a guy never really got his due. I mean, he's the from, of course, the famous Orton family, Bob Orton Sr., Bob Orton, he was Bob Orton Jr.'s brother. He would be the uncle of Randy Orton. And I saw pretty much most of his career. He was largely used as an enhancement guy or lower card guy there in the WWF is where most people would have seen him. But he did wrestle other places. But he was really, really good. He was just also really kind of out there, and he had some problems. He was involved in a very serious automobile accident that I think claimed someone else's life. So he had some legal issues as well. And what might have been for Barry Orton, I think, is would he have been as good as, say, somebody like Randy Orton or even his brother Bob Orton Jr.? I think it's possible. I think it absolutely is possible had his life had better decisions and better directions outside the ring than what ended up happening. Of course, he got drug into the whole early 1990s scandals, the Ring Boy scandals and all that,
yeah.
As sort of a whistleblower on that sort of situation. And, as unfortunate as it is and as ridiculous as it sounds, professional wrestling has a history, especially WWE. Josh, I don't know if you know this or not or have noticed, boy, people will really vehemently defend that company.
Yep.
And even at times when they are clearly in the wrong and they've clearly done some seedy things, and they attack the messenger without hearing the message. I think that's what caught Barry Orton up in there. And it's too bad. I think the Barry Orton story is one of them. It's a story a lot of people don't know, but probably should. Go back and read some of what Dave has written in The Observer about Barry Orton. I think you get a real good. He had a real good take on Orton and knew him and pretty well, I believe. And so he's a guy who's, I'm afraid, he's going to be lost to history if people don't pay attention. And I think he's more significant than what people think he is.
And Buddy Colt passing away during the month as well. And Brian Blair talked about his relationship to Buddy on a recent Observer Radio with Dave and Garrett as well. So before I let you go, Carl, coming up on the hour, and you can hear, you talked a lot about some things from the past and talking about, you know, World Championship Wrestling and some of the things you've been watching. You can hear a lot of that. You know, you don't have to go to other podcasts. You can go to your podcast right here in this very website. I want to give you the chance to plug away on the Dragon King Carl Wrestling Show, and also Dragon King Dark that comes out on Sundays. And then also, I keep mentioning When It Was Cool, your pop culture Patreon. Go ahead and let people know what they don't know, so they know.
Well, thank you very much, Josh. I appreciate it. I do the Classic Wrestling Audio Show, the Dragon King Carl Classic Wrestling Audio Show here at WrestlingObserver.com, Figure4Online.com, and it's not just one show. It's a rotation. We do themes. I try to do funny, comical reviews of older shows where we can sit and laugh and have a good time. Not making fun of it, just having fun. That's what wrestling's for. Remember, you can actually have fun watching wrestling. That's what we do. Plus, we do some deeper dive history stuff. We get very serious sometimes with the good old Ultimate History of Pro Wrestling Zone, which is a timeline I put together. And so we do a long-form history of pro wrestling. It's a very serious show. If you don't, you like to learn history, well, that's the show. But then we mix it up with some other stuff. I'm doing pro wrestling true crime, and unfortunately there's plenty of that to go around too. So I try to make my show appealing and different, and if you don't like one particular episode, well, maybe you'll like the next one because it'll be themed differently. And of course, thank you for mentioning Dragon King Dark, a show I took over from Brian Alvarez, After Dark show. And we're in the midst of a series called the 100 Darkest Moments in Pop Culture History. And these are events that happened that changed the course of the history of popular culture. And boy, it's covering lots of stuff from music to sports to TV to movies and all points in between. And then again, thank you, Josh, for mentioning my website, which is whenitwascool.com. It is a fully functioning major website. We have articles, we have podcasts, we have a whole podcasting network. Hope you'll check it out at whenitwascool.com.
Yeah, all types of great stuff from the good Carl Stern. I almost call you Dr. Carl Stern. I don't
That's fine. Yeah, professor, whatever.
I don't know where that came from. But yeah, but thank you for doing all you do for this website. You've been doing it before I was with it more than 10 plus years ago, and I'm sure you'll be with it long, long, long in the years ahead. Obviously, there is no shortage of classic stuff to go through to keep reminding people about history because, the kids these days, Carl, as you know, they care about what happened in the last hour. Not the last the last year or 2 years and all that, but history matters, as we've talked about a lot in the show. So thank you for doing everything you do, and thanks for hanging with me for an hour talking about
Josh. I'll say this. I greatly appreciate you asking me on here, and I can officially say the feud that never was anyway is dead. So
I love it. So now we can
hey, sometimes we got to have a little fun. Sometimes we have to shake things up. Look,
you got it.
If I catch you not paying attention, I've got to rattle the cage a little bit and get you paying attention. Right. So it's all in fun. So.
I love it. I know some of the people following the storyline will be upset to hear about that. That was just a work the whole time, but
we're like UFC, we get in there and slug it out. We've talked bad about each other's mothers and then we shake hands in the end.
Right. Exactly.
But you know what? UFC still goes on, right?
It certainly does. Well, Carl, thank you very much, and probably like to have you back to cover one of these other months too at some points. So we'll figure out the schedule, and if not, we'll reserve a spot for you for 22 for sure.
Well, thank you very much. I'm very grateful.
Carl Stern, thank you once again. All right, big thanks to Carl Stern for stopping by digitally, audio-ly, or whatever, audibly, something like that. Anyway, hope you guys enjoyed that. Again, tons of stuff that happened this past month. I was kind of looking through the list again. The NXT moved to Tuesdays. So I'd kind of just completely blanked that was in March. We had, obviously, the AEW Revolution and that whole debacle and how that was handled. Again, I wrote a column on that. And Yeah, Tony Khan says they're going to do another one of these at some point, and it'll be interesting how they do the build for that, or how they kind of get the fans back, so to speak, in terms of being able to trust them. This is going to turn out good. I assume it will, just based on, because you can't have a second flop like that in a row. But AEW, for some reason, and it's happened in the, I mentioned this on Twitter, and the Cody Rhodes Andrade Street Fight Wednesday. There's always something with the big stunts, going back to that, going back to Blood and Guts, the Jericho, how they shot the fall off the cage, and like this Cody flaming table stunt. There's always something that seems to go just not right. Like the Jericho gauge match, I think that was one that went pretty good. You know, the pizza cutter gaff aside, that was just kind of a weird, happy accident. But there's just something that, you know, Cody, my big thing was, you know, Cody took the whole brunt of going through a table himself. You know, granted, Andrade was on fire like a little bit. And it sounds, if I typed that out and showed somebody, they'd be like, what in the hell are you talking about? But it was just kind of one of those things of, to me, the guy that gets pinned should be the one that goes through the table. That the peeling skin thing I thought was distracting. It just felt like if, how did I see this put? It may be my cage side seats or somebody that if the prep for the stunt gets more talk than the stunt itself, it's not worth doing. And I think we're at this point where it's everything is for the stunt and not actually how does it make sense in the whole match. And it's just like, oh, the stunt, Cody took that suplex through a table and he was on fire, but he actually won the match. So if someone falls through a flaming table, like physically falls through a flaming table, to me, they should lose. I don't know if that was the plan, just overshot, but yeah, it was, there's a spectacle aside, but then also, again, we have to take a step back and be like, what's the point of this in the context of the story that's being told? And does it make sense? It's always, does it make sense? It's the thing that we complain about WWE for decades about now. Does it make sense? In that context, it didn't. You couldn't do a redo, but it was weird. I was just like, oh, this is so great, so all stuff. But Cody was the one that took the bump through the table. He should have lost. You know, I don't, it's just kind of one of those things, but something always seems to go askew, and I don't know why that is. And at this point, it's not, you know, coincidence. It's something's just off. And again, just the impact stuff. Yeah. So this, yeah, always an interesting month, and I was really grateful that Carl could spend some time with us, and definitely have him back. If not for this series, one more time, but definitely for next year, assuming I do this. This is a lot of podcasts I've been doing. This, I just recorded one you will hear on Sunday, the first MMA year in review series, January, February, March is in the can. I'll come out on Sunday with Paul. That was a lot of fun. And then, April, May, and June, I'm shooting to have those next week. So a lot of podcasts coming up, but I'm grateful you guys are hopefully enjoying this. Let me know on Twitter if there's things that you had completely forgot about or something that maybe should have been added. You know, let me know. I love hearing feedback because, you know, I'm alone in a room talking in a microphone and nobody's here. So it's nice to actually hear if people like this and from what things that some feedback I had heard, I guess people do. But hopefully people are and spread the word. These are all free. So I don't know any other website that's doing year in reviews like this. It's always looking ahead. I like to look back. And yeah, anything you guys can do to help spread the word, retweets, any of that type of stuff. I don't want to beg, but I kind of am, you know, let people know. This was hopefully this is a worthwhile endeavor and something I'll continue to do next year and hopefully in the years to come. So on that note, thank you guys for listening. You have a lot of choices in your podcast day. I greatly appreciate the hour you spend with me or any of the hours you spend with a great host here at WrestlingObserver.com. And until next time, which will be the MMA Year in Review Series, part one, insert catchphrase here.